Dr. Joe Kelly, thanks very much for holding on. Right, so let's talk about landlords in Donegal. How did they respond to the appearance of the famine?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And maybe to set it in context, when England were looking at the, they realised that there was a serious problem in Ireland, and they set up a commission, a poor investigation committee in 1838. And they did his report and found that there was about 2.5 million people on the poverty line all the time with a want of food. And they said, well, how are we going to address this? We have a problem in Ireland. And so the solution was, they suggested, first of all, not to use the English system of poor law, the workhouse system in England, that this wouldn't work in Ireland. But the government in England at the time didn't want to hear this. And they said, no, we're going to extend what we have in England into Ireland. It fits in England, so it fits in Ireland. And it was totally inappropriate. And so what they did is they set up workhouses throughout the whole of Ireland, about 130. And there was 8 unions here in Donegal, like Milford, where we had the commemoration there at the weekend, and Dunfanaghy and different Glenties and different places like that. And they said, that will be the system by which we will alleviate the poverty. The problem with this was that local people had to pay for the upkeep of those houses. So the poor people in these areas had to pay for the poor people in these places. And the way they worked it out was that if you had a farm worth £4, you must pay rates. And those rates, that tax, would go to the maintenance of the workhouses. So that was the philosophy. But if your farm wasn't over £4, valued £4, then you didn't have to pay rates. Well, in the case of, for example, in Fulcara, £4 in those times was 960 old pence. The average holding in Fulcara and Clonmacnoise was about 400 pence. So they were halfways, way below halfways of the poverty line. And Gidor was even worse. Their farms were worth about 240 pence. Now, the poverty line was 960 pence. So most people were so poor that they couldn't pay for these rates. So the thing was, then it was left to the landlords to pay. Mm-hmm. And this is where the problem arised. So if a landlord had a busy workhouse, he was having to pay for it. So the moral of the story was, you need to evict the people, get them out of your land, get them away from you, because you don't want to have to pay for them. And so what happened during the famine, because of the poor law system, many people, upwards of 1 million people, were evicted in Ireland because of the bureaucracy of the British poor law system. And rather than helped us, it actually exasperated and made worse the situation for the ordinary.
I mean, we have another situation where a government makes a policy that impacts the poorest most.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So how then could those people find their way to a workhouse to feed themselves?
Well, the problem was, when you went to the workhouse, you had to give up your farm, and you never got back to it again. So the landlord took possession of your farm. So now you are without a home and without land. So your choice was either to die or to emigrate. And you know, you mentioned something very wonderful there about, you know, our own history and emigration. When people come back, immigrants come back, you know what they stand for me? And we have statues to remind us of the famine and national commemoration statues and all the rest. But when I see someone come home from abroad, they remind me of the famine, because they were the people that had to leave, and they have the memory of the famine maybe greater than us, because they know why they are where they are. Partially, many people had left before the famine.
Well,
for
listen,
the famine.
And as you say earlier on, we have been conditioned, or because of our recent history, in how we are generous and we're welcoming and opening, and also that sense to, at a certain age, it seems, either by choice or necessity, to travel the world and try and better yourself. Those seeds were planted around famine time as well. How many people can we estimate died in Donegal as the result of the famine? Our population now, say, for instance, is around about 163,64. It's probably actually close to 170,000 now with new residents. But do we know what the population of Donegal was at famine times? And do we have a number as to how many passed away?
Yeah, well, the population of Donegal would have been a lot higher then. They reckon in Ulster, and we remember a lot of, as in Belfast, more urban areas didn't have the same famine results as we had, as in deaths. They estimate also about 111,000 people died during the famine. And in Donegal, it's somewhere in the region of 13,000 people. Wow. 13,000 people. And in 1847 alone, that number was 5,000. So 5,000 of the people of Donegal died. And the population would have been a lot higher then than it is now. It would have been probably about 240,000, 250,000, wow, I'd imagine, at that time. So you know, over a period, say from 45 to 51, somewhere in that region, about 40,000 Irish or Donegal people either left or died.
How much higher might that be without the workhouses?
I don't think the workhouses achieved a terrible lot. See, the problem with the workhouses...
people were able to feed themselves, though. I mean, you talked about there was... Was it 14 or how many did you say was in Donegal? But in any case...
14,000 died in Donegal during
famine. But in terms of the workhouses, people were able to work and to feed themselves. Surely that would have... Would it not have prevented further...
That's very interesting. I mean, again, there's a number of historians have done research and published books about the workhouses. And just from my own understanding and listening to, for example, the priest that wrote at that time, a lot of the people didn't want to go to the workhouses because they were very harsh. People weren't very well fed there. The workhouses were overstressed. They had maybe three times the capacity that they were built for. And the landlords that were paying for these workhouses and to feed them didn't want too much money spent. So a lot of people actually died in the workhouses. Yeah. And what happened in the workhouses as well was fever came into the workhouses and it killed a lot of people. So people were afraid to go to the workhouse in case, first of all, the malnutrition and then fever. And what maybe people don't understand is fever killed more people than actually starvation. What happened was obviously your immune system's down because of the lack of food, because of malnutrition, but then the fever gets in easily enough and it killed loads of people in Donegal. Fever killed people more than hunger itself. Mm-hmm. And so what people didn't want to go to the workhouse, and what actually did happen was people built little turf huts outside their own homes and they fed people with fever on a shovel. And you either lived and survived or you died and you were buried. Wow. But they didn't have them in the house and they're hoping that the fever would pass. And that's the way they would treat them. And there's a lovely story told about down in the folklore collection of 1947 on the 100th anniversary of the famine. They sent people out to gather folklore of the living memory. And there's one story told by a woman down there in the Manshire, that's there in Crawley, down beside Tessie's and Leo's down that direction. And she talked about how people... when the fever got into the house, nobody went and visited their house. Reminds me a wee bit of COVID. Nobody would go and visit. Yeah. And one by one, people died. And what happened then, she described how hungry dogs went round and they ate some of these remains. And then when people came back to themselves, she said, they went and they burned their houses because of the disease and the bacteria or the whatever disease would be in that. So rather than go into the house, they burned the houses. Mm-hmm. They gathered the bodies, the remains, the bones, and buried them and burned the houses. So look, it was a horrific vista when you think in it like that. And
okay,
the suffering
it was. I want you to define, because we have obviously some of the workhouses have been knocked down. Some remain pretty much intact, and we know the sites of the others. What do they stand for in our history? In other words, what should, if we were to put something to commemorate on that site, is it death and disease and hardship? Or if I asked you to go into Donegal town now and define that workhouse and how we should treat it in our history, how would you do it?
Look, we can't change our past. And I think we need to be very aware of it and understand it and be very much tied into the emotion of what happened and to be very, very cognizant of just the pain, the suffering, the loss and all that. But you know what? You see, this is where you have to have hope. That should be a transformative experience and make us better human beings. And I think the Irish people, strangely, we are better people because of our famine. We are more generous and kind and welcoming and understanding and friendly. We know what loss is. We know what suffering is. And if I were to put in any kind of symbol, I think of the children of Lur that were converted into swans. It's a famous mythological story. And like set free, so to speak. In a way, we need to liberate ourselves from this. And it's going to take us about 200 or 300 years to move on from the psychological...
But that's why I talked about us having a national conversation, because I think sometimes you can only move forward when you actually determine where you're at and you settle on a history, and then you can say, right, from here we go forward. And you know, and a happy birthday to a lady, Ireland's oldest person, 109. She celebrated her birthday this year. Her mother or father would only have to have been 85 for them to be able to tell that lady who's living right now what it was like to live through the famine. That how it, it came to my mind to articulate how recent this is to us. The oldest lady in Ireland, her mum or dad would only have to be 75 to have been 10 through the worst of the famine. Just very finally, a caller says that their impression is that famine is the famine is regarded as a Southern Ireland issue, and they believe there's very little about the famine in Northern Ireland. You've already referenced we do have figures across Ulster, 111,000 people died by the famine. But is there something to what the listener says? Is that slightly complicated because of the political makeup of Northern Ireland as well, and how we're struggling maybe to discuss it? It's even more complicated maybe for elements of the community in Northern Ireland.
Well, first of all, I mean, the potato blight didn't work because you were Catholic or Protestant. It crossed everybody. Yeah. But the farm husbandry of planters were always far more advanced than us. That's just a historical reality. They planted hedges. They had fruit, you know, apples and pears. They knew this. You know, they were very, very organized, very clean, very good farm husbandry. We didn't have that. And we didn't have the knowledge that they had. But having said that, and this is very, very important, it's very easy to point the finger and blame the landlords. There were a lot of good landlords. Hamilton in Donegal Town, he was a recklessly generous landlord. He spent all his money. Alford and Ballyconnell and Fulcara and Hill, they spent about £4,000 of their own money feeding people. There were a lot of good landlords. And as regards Northern Ireland, the Londonderry Ladies Association, they were workwomen in Londonderry Association in Derry. They raised money and sent it into Donegal. For example, they sent £15 to the people of Buncrana, and that would have been a lot of money back then. The Quakers, the Society of Friends, they brought in, I think it was about 1920 big soup boilers into Donegal to feed the people of Donegal. You know, the Cabrys and the Bourneville's, they were very generous, and they were motivated by their religion and their sense of common humanity. So one has to be very careful when one is talking about this, not to be pointing and blaming. Yeah. There were policy deficiencies, but you know what? There were also brilliant people that stood up and did what they could. Even the, for example, Catholic priests, a number of them here in Donegal, some of them got the fever themselves when they're out visiting the people, and some of them died. They weren't immune to this either. So, you know, there's that whole side of it as well.
And I think too, if you don't mind me saying, and you can associate yourself with these comments or otherwise, in that we started this conversation talking about the famine and the fact that food was taken from this country that perhaps could have helped to sustain the population. We should reflect on that, I think, as a nation, when we have hundreds of thousands of children living in poverty, 200,000, when we have so many people accessing food banks. We know the food banks across Donegal are under pressure at the moment. The shelves are running dry, and there are in the high hundreds families who are now regularly having to go to food banks to feed themselves. Before, maybe sometimes we look back at history and go, oh, look what the Brits did to us. Maybe we should say that should be a reminder to ensure, in a country that we're reminded constantly of how wealthy it is, that we're kind of guilty of doing that to our own people right now, Joe.
I agree with you. And again, I think it's back to maybe our own psyche that we expect so little from people in leadership. We expect so little from people that are in charge of us, and we think that, oh, they're not listening, or they don't have to be accountable to us. And that's maybe our fault. We need to start believing in ourselves and say, no, we deserve better. We have a right to have better. And just maybe to put it in a context worldwide, if I'd been talking to you, say, 10 years ago, I'd have been saying to you 80 people, 80 individuals fit into a double-decker bus, had more money than half the population. Now it's down to eight. Wealthy men have more money than half the population of the world, while people are starving and hunger and poverty and war. I don't know how those people can live with their conscience.
No, I don't know how, and set themselves up as heroes too in some regards. And also, we as a people, I believe, really need to hit the reset button and start being together, because we are allowing ourselves to to be divided. So you'll have people who are working going, oh, look at them people on social welfare, they should be doing this, that and the other. We have others going, look at why should we have these people homeless and these people are coming in and taking this, that and the other. And it works if you're in the political elite and you want to keep the status quo. It's perfect because you've got the population arguing amongst each other and split and divided. You know, we the people need to start pulling together, because if you talk about holding a government to account, whichever government that might be, a divided people will never do that because they're arguing over what the government is doing wrong. You know what I mean? And I think people need to start focusing on what unites them more than what's divided them. And we need to get that sense of community, that Irish community back that now you have to go to Dubai or London or New York or Brisbane to see. And it's there alive and well, Joe. That sense of community is there still, but it's being lost in this country and it's getting worse all the time.
Well, I think I've had this debate with you before. I'm going back to the famine. We were ruled from Westminster. It was an Irish famine for the Irish people to solve, even though we didn't have the government that was supposedly our government allowing us to do anything about it. And if you look just, for example, last week alone in our own government, they brought in, for example, they're questioning our neutrality. They've put in under the back door, people aren't aware of it, a new sex ed program that's just horrific. They're bringing in new, the speech law I talked to you before, hate speech. They're bringing in all these laws by an agenda from the top. And at the bottom, the everyday Joe soap, who's talking about electricity prices? Who's talking about food prices? Who's fighting for the real issues that matter? It's not been done from the top.
No, but I don't agree with everything that you've said there in terms of my views and yours might differentiate on a couple of those issues, but that's fine. That doesn't matter. That we and you can have a chat and sort it out and you might change my views and God forbid I might even change yours if we did. But my point is, as you see, then when you get down to it, right, people, we don't just let's have a debate on hate speech. What happens is then it's hate speech so that you can't criticise trans people, or it's hate speech that you can't criticise migrants, right? That's not what it's all about. And as soon as we start daisy chaining the issues, the debate disappears because it's piggybacked and it's hijacked. No, I'm not saying it's not relevant to those issues, right? But it's perfect because you have the population arguing not about hate speech. They start arguing about trans rights or immigration or migration. And the government will sit there and go, well, look, we can just introduce this because these people haven't a clue what they're on about. So we need to start talking about issues. Yes, we can use examples, but I think when we start grouping a number of issues in together, then it becomes liberalism versus being conservative. And we just end up in this endless loop and cycle and we get nowhere. And all the while, the big boys can do whatever they like, Joe.
Well, I mean, the political elite are running the world. Just talk about the wealthy people. Why is there not a worldwide wealth tax? They talk about, you know, they can come together for COP and for environmental and climate change. Can they not come together and introduce a wealth tax worldwide? These multi-billion billionaires that are making such money and nothing's been done about it because it doesn't suit.
But the people, we have the world's richest man in Elon Musk, who I actually don't have a problem with. He is lauded by the people who have nothing as the saviour. Not only that, they give him €8 a month for the pleasure, right, of listening to his words. Humanity, what hope is there when the richest man in the world is seen as a hero to the poor? And people don't...
Elon Musk, he's challenging the status quo.
To whose benefit? He's driving traffic. He's driving traffic to save his 44 billion. And he might frame it up as being free speech. It's not. How can free speech cost €8 a month, Joe? Don't tell me you're drinking that Kool-Aid.
No, I'm sorry. I don't spend €8
on it. Listen, come here.
My children, you know, be looking for money for Xboxes and top-ups and on the computer games. And I say to them, where's this money going? It's going into some very wealthy...
Oh, Come here, let them enjoy the Xbox. All right, come here. I have to go.
But listen, back to the famine. Look, as a nation, we have to have that conversation, as you mentioned, and we have to think a lot more about it. There's a lot of sad stories there, but there's also a lot of hope if we think about it in a positive way and how we are a better people for it. And finally, just to mention that one of the areas that were most hit by the famine, and there's a lovely book called The Outer Edge of Ulster, edited by Professor Breton McSivney, called The Outer Edge of Ulster, and it describes what happened in Fannet during the famine, how it basically went from 10,000 people down to 3,000 or 4,000 people, and how the whole social fabric of Fannet was kind of fell apart because of it. And just to say that, I was at Fannet at the weekend, a big shout out to Anya Peter McConaughey, who launched a book about Fannet, and it ties in with that famine era last weekend. So it's a big plus for Fannet, and to congratulate her and the people of Fannet for this lovely, wonderful book that was launched there last weekend.
And I think I see a picture of you in the paper at that event, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Have a lovely day, Joe. That's Dr. Joe Kelly, historian there. Right, okay, I have to take a 4-minute break. Please stay where you are, because an interesting topic just around the corner. Rightio, a bit of self-promotion going on now, and why not? And it's not really actually self-promotion, I shouldn't phrase it like that, because it is the promotion of the amazing service that our business and the business community provide across the region. And we'll talk about where this came from, but it's about recognising that. And there's a massive appetite there amongst the public, as was clear from nominations and votes and what have you, to recognise what our businesses do. And Sean Quinn, as I mentioned, joins us now, because we're heading towards the big ceremony on Sunday. And, you know, it was huge. It turned out to be huge. I mean, you might sit there and say, yeah, we always knew it was going to be. I don't know, Sean, you're in sales, so I don't know what what you'll say.
No, I'll tell the truth, honestly.
Yeah, no, but all jokes aside, like, no, I mean, did you think it was going to become what it has become?
No. This actually was an idea about 7-8 months ago, where myself and Fionnuala sat down and we looked and we thought, this is an opportunity. And we launched it on the 13th of March, and we were absolutely blown away. Couldn't believe the initial reaction we got, but the continuous reaction that it ended up just short of 16,000 nominations. 1,300 businesses, slightly around that figure, were actually nominated in this process. Wow. And it went right across the county. There's no little town that wasn't involved in this. Absolutely blew us away. Now, it gave us extra work.
Well, it's a headache, really, isn't it? Because, I mean, that has to be whittled down.
Yeah.
And that's a process that we had external help with, and it was all done incredibly independently as well, and we'll go through some of that in a moment. Mm. A big amount of work. Like, I would say, if you said to people there was 1,300 businesses in Donegal, they might go, really? Do you know what I'm on about? Because it's not a figure you would have ever have calculated in your mind. So for that amount of businesses to be nominated in and of itself is amazing. And every single one of those businesses was nominated because someone who avails of a service or a product or what have you thought the service or the quality was of a standard that they took their time to do it. So I think every nomination there is important, not to mention then those that got the multiple nominations.
Yeah, and you know, it's, I suppose we're going with the times, and it was all online, and there was people that hadn't, you know, we got phone calls, how do I do this? We spoke people through the process of how do you do it, and made it as simple as possible. But yeah, just to get the imagination and the thoughts and the amount, Greg, of people who actually took time to write things about that business and why they were nominating them, it actually helped the judges big time because they were able to actually put that into part of their process, and it was huge, absolutely huge. And even down to the last couple of days, there were still people nominating and still new businesses coming in that you know we hadn't seen, and people left it as usual to the last minute. Mm-hmm. So it's, we were delighted at that part. Absolutely okay. Delighted.
So the thing about these awards too was about the inclusivity, and they were guided, the categories to some extent were guided by the nominations, because I mean, how do you cover just the 1,300? So there was headline categories and then subcategories. Now we can't go through them all, right? But we have broken them down into, and I'll mention the judges at the same time.
Yeah.
We broke the headline categories down into retail, and Charlie Boyle is the judge in that area. In health and beauty, we have the services of Emma Murray, stylist. House and home, Noel Cunningham is our judge there. In lifestyle, Sandra Deveni is on board. In terms of motor, we have Michael Brennan. And community and professional services, Deirdre McGlone. I mean, those are some fantastic names and completely independent as well. And they have whittled them down to shortlists in a number of subcategories, and the winners will be announced on Sunday, Sean.
Yeah, and I was so glad we didn't have to do that part.
Yeah, it's been a nightmare. That Fnuda can't even agree on the colouring competition, so I certainly wouldn't let you lose.
We can,
this one.
When we come in here.
You can't judge colouring. You're not going to be fit to judge this.
But no, anyway. I'm so glad I'm out of the loop, because it's the right way to go independently, because they can take their time, they can review, they can give what they're valued opinion, because that keyword is valued, because they are recognised names, and again we were happy to get them on board. It just adds credibility to the whole thing as well.
Yeah. Now, also, before we talk about what's coming up on Sunday, just want to mention the sponsors as well, who got on board with this. PGIM, main sponsor, Healthwise Pharmacy Group, Eye Heating and Cooling, Donegal Airport, MCM Brands, Hickey, Clark and Langan, and of course our good friends at iMotors have got in behind this, and an important too, and it's good, it's good brand recognition for them as well. Everyone's a winner, so that's really good, especially given the level of interest that was in this. And also too, before we talk about the night again, it's business customers as well, but our listeners as well embrace this as well, drove huge traffic to our social media and to our website, and bought into it and got involved, and it wouldn't be possible without them, certainly on this scale, Sean.
Oh, they've made it for us, because they engaged with us from day one, and they embraced what we were doing and took time to go online. There was a few people that, as I said, they rang. There's a couple of people actually wrote in as well. So without them, we wouldn't had the 16,000. There's no two ways about that. But it also recognises that the jobs that businesses are doing out there, they're doing something really positive, that people will take that time. And it's great that on the evening, there'll be 121 businesses in the room. There can only be a winner on each section, but it's great that they'll be recognised. It's a great networking opportunity as well.
Yeah, and I think the timing is right too, because this is about supporting business, and we're talking in the context this week heading into the awards, where sentiment surveys amongst small and medium businesses, which many of these are, where there's more optimism in that sector as well about the future, that maybe we've hit a ceiling in terms of overheads and what have you. So we're heading into this when there is also seemingly in small and medium enterprise an increased positivity going forward. And as I say before, scratch record incoming. These are the businesses that we go to for our sponsorship, that we ask to buy this, that and then, or back our local team or whatever it might be, that employ our young people, that employ us and our friends and families. And no harm to multinationals or online shopping, but these businesses, many of them are the bread and butter of our community. And again, that makes it extra special for me that we're recognising it in this way. Right, so it's a sellout, folks. There is a big awards ceremony taking place at the Mount Errigal Hotel this Sunday. Things kick off at 6 p.m. with a drinks reception.
Yeah, so it's we'll ask people to come for 6 o'clock. And there's a great opportunity to network with other businesses. As I said, there's people who have never met other people before from all over the county. I think we've covered everywhere in the county. So, yeah, 6 o'clock. And then we will try and get them in as quick as possible for dinner at 7 p.m. So sitting down for dinner. There's about 520 people there. So there's a lot of food to go out on tables. And the whole night kicks off really from when you walk in the door. And we're hoping that it's going to be great crack.
High energy, good buzz.
Absolutely.
Dinner at 7. So you've got 2 hours to eat, because the awards kick off at 9 p.m. sharp, by the way. So we are going to then go through the various categories, and the winners introduce the guests, the judges, of course, to those in attendance. And I think it's going to be good fun.
It's going to be a great crack.
I hope lots of people have taken Monday off.
I haven't, but I might have been here at 9 o'clock. But
well, I will, because if I'm not, there's no show. So
unlucky there, Greg.
Yeah, you know what? No harm. I'm looking forward to being here on Monday at 9 o'clock.
I think the whole a couple of years ago, we couldn't do this. Now we can. Mm-hmm. And, I think the location's perfect. It's a great sized room. It'll be a high energy from when you walk in the door, great food, and then, you know, carried on by the awards actual ceremony. And you know, hopefully there's loads of cheering in the room and people get involved. And I'm sure they will.
High energy,
I'm sure they will. Absolutely.
And anything afterwards?
Yeah, the disco afterwards, yeah. Oh, if you've still got...
Not showing your age there.
Energy left, well, we're going to get a band, but I thought, no, we'll do a disco.
All right, good stuff.
Do
all
a
right.
disco.
Okay, so you can party into the early hours as well. And it's all at the Mount Errigal Hotel. As I say, it is a sellout at this stage. Over 500 will be in attendance. If you want to be part of it, right, but you can't be there, and you want to see the glitz and the glamour as well, by the way, please make sure to, if you don't already, follow us on our social media, because we've got a brilliant social media here team here as well. There'll be some interviews going up, some videos, some pictures and stuff. Yep. And we want, you know, because the dress code is sexy. Right,
dress to impress. Now,
dress to impress. Yeah. No, sexy.
Are you doing sexy? That. Are you?
I'm doing. I'm going to dress up. I'm going to dress up to the nines. So that's it. So
are you going to give me a hint, or?
I'm going to wear a suit.
Okay.
I'm going to wear a suit. Yeah. It's going to be good fun. And as I say, if you can't be in attendance, hopefully there is going to be loads of stuff on
socials. Yeah, absolutely.
As
yeah.
well for people to sort of feel part of it as well and see, as I say, the glitz and glamour.
Because during the evening, there will be loads of things happening on social media. We have a full team there. So you're 100% right there, Greg. If you can't be there, it'll feel as if you are there. Just tune into our Highland Radio Facebook page and you won't miss much.
Yeah, and Insta as well, I'm sure.
Yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
Sean, listen, well done to you and your team for pulling this together. Is this the first of an annual thing now, or is the jury out on that?
Oh, absolutely. But ask me again that on Monday, maybe.
Okay,
No, absolutely. If we've got the response this time around, yeah, I think we can make this an annual.
Right, back with more after these. Okay, Greg, I gave you a wee preview for the break. Greg, Simply the Best is the most iconic Tina Turner song. It is, but it takes on different guises over the years. For me, what Tina Turner's Simply the Best is back when I used to watch the boxing as a young person with my father and brothers and what have you, and it was... Chris Eubank at that time was the anti-hero, and of course I followed him, and that was his entrance, the iconic entrance, just when that started to become a thing. Another Simply the Best clear winner, that's coming from the team, from all the votes. A few people suggesting Proud Mary. It's such a party song, many happy memories. I'm sure you're going to hear Proud Mary before the end of the program, but I promised at the top of the show, right? But it's been so busy that we're leaving it really late. So what I'm going to do for you, I'll tell you what I'll do actually, firstly, because we're pretty much near the end of the show. I'm going to say goodbye to people watching on social media because of copyright reasons we can't play music out. So thank you so much for watching. We'll be back with you, of course, online from 9 tomorrow morning. But for those of you in radio land, here she is, the late now, great, Tina Turner. Here is Simply the Best. You come to me. Tina Turner there, and simply the best. And of course, it's always sad to hear if anyone's passing, but what a legacy Tina Turner leaves behind her, and memories too that are intertwined with some of yours out there. I want to play that for Paul McCahill Remelton. Happy birthday to you, Paul, from Remelton, and also simply the best work experience ever we've had here ever. And that is Clodagh, who's been with us on Thursdays for the last while. And this is her last day. And she's been a real breath of fresh air and great fun. And hopefully we'll see Clodagh again soon. But it's been great having her here with us here at Highland Radio. Okay. That's where we have to leave it on the programme today. And we had subs in and everything. Thanks to Caroline Orr, who researched and produced and then ran off to a meeting to be replaced by Donna Marie Doherty. DMD, as she likes to be called. I don't think it's going to catch on, though. And of course, we also had Niamh working on the show as well, keeping us up to date with all the social media and what have you. We are back tomorrow morning from 9 a.m. It is a Friday, which means we have a fantastic Friday panel assembled for you. They will join us between 9 and 10. Then between 11 and 12, Michael and Fionnuala will be with us as we switch off a little bit from all the more serious stuff and ease our way into the weekend. We've got loads of guests lined up for you as well between 11 and 12, as well as Michael and Fionnuala. That and so much more besides. Have a lovely day, will you please? Be happy, be safe, and stay tuned for John Breslin.